The next section of Coogan's article goes on to detail, or document, I should say, in greater detail, J. Peter Grace's connections with the U.S. intelligence community. A vice president of W.R. Grace and Company is also a prominent Cuban exile and a close affiliate of the U.S. intelligence group. His book was published by the Buckley family's Arlington House publisher. There's also a fellow named Francis Flanagan, who is on the ITT-organized ad hoc committee for Chile, intimately involved in the U.S. intelligence community's successful efforts at destabilizing the Allende regime in Chile. And perhaps most importantly, the Coogan article here documents connections between W.R. Grace and something called the American Council for the International Promotion of Democracy Under God. That organization is headed by a man named Father Felix Morlion, M-O-R-L-I-O-N, and is closely affiliated in turn with the Vatican's pro-Deo movement. And the Coogan text here contains a statement by an Italian journalist that the pro-Deo movement represented the intersecting point between the Mafia and the Vatican. Very important in light of the tangle of organized crime interests that have emerged so very prominently in the background of the Ambrogiano scandal, the Propaganda Due scandal, and the shooting of Pope John Paul II. The relationship between not only Grace and the intelligence community, but between the W.R. Grace and Company and the pro-Deo movement, identified by an Italian journalist as the Mafia's link to the Vatican, Coogan writes as follows. J. Peter also has a very big group concerned with intelligence. Heading this group is Antonio Navarro, N-A-V-A-R-R-O, a vice president of Grace and a Cuban exile. Navarro, who went to the same Jesuit school as Castro and later worked with him against Batista, has a book describing his efforts called Tocayo, T-O-C-A-Y-O. Tocayo is published by the Buckley-controlled Arlington House. Another Grace executive involved in intelligence dirty work is the group's representative in Washington, Francis D. Flanagan. Flanagan was one of the members of the ITT-organized ad hoc committee on Chile during the Allende period. One of the most sinister roles that W.R. Grace has been involved with is the W.R. Grace Foundation's funding of the American Council for the International Promotion of Democracy Under God. This organization is directly tied to Father Felix Morlion's Vatican-based pro-Deo movement. When one knowledgeable Italian journalist was asked about the pro-Deo movement, he replied, "If you want to know where the Vatican meets up with the Mafia, that's it." Worth noting in a footnote here to the passage I just read you, the whole Mafia relationship with Sovereign Military Order of Malta is very interesting. The most prominent figure who is sometimes suggested to have Mafia friends is Frank Sinatra, who for many years has been obsessed with joining SMOM. Worth noting here that Frank Sinatra organized Ronald Reagan's inauguration ceremonies, and one of the guests at those ceremonies was Licio Gelli, chairman or a grand master of the Propaganda Due Lodge and a fellow arrested in connection with the Banco Ambrosiano collapse last fall. Final section here of the Coogan article I'm going to read concerns some information we present in the first part of the broadcast of the series on the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, the Knights of Malta. This concerns the fact that the members of that organization are considered to be members of an entirely separate state by more than 40 different countries, and they are given separate passports recognized by those countries as belonging to a different state. This is worth keeping in mind because of all the key members of the U.S. military, political, and intelligence communities who are affiliated with SMOM. Alexander Haig was just inducted. James and William Buckley are members. CIA Director William Casey is a member, as is former CIA Director John McCone. Keep all of this in mind as we review some of the information about the 40 countries recognizing the Knights as a separate state. Also, here is some information about possible relationships between the Knights of Malta and the Propaganda Due scandal that we've looked at so often in the past, and we're going to look at some more in the future. Apparently, Umberto Ortolani, who is one of the key figures in the Propaganda Due scandal, is the ambassador of SMOM to Uruguay.
All this information presented by Coogan as follows. J. Peter Grace is only one member of the Knights of Malta. There are over 1,000 knights in the U.S. alone. There are many thousands more in Europe and Latin America. About 40 countries acknowledge that the Knights are a sovereign state, and the Knights have their own special passport which these countries accept. Strictly speaking, the current head of the CIA is, in the laws of about 40 nations, a member of a whole different state, as well as an American citizen.
Isn't this all a bit odd? Isn't it also odd that when the P2 scandal broke in Italy, it was described as a Masonic scandal, unquote, despite the fact that top Vatican financier Michele Sindona and his associate Roberto Calvi, as well as the ambassador of SMOM to Uruguay, Umberto Ortolani, described on November 23, 1981, in Journal de Genève as the brains behind P2, were key men in the scandal. Why wasn't the P2 affair a Vatican scandal as well as a Masonic one? It is very well known that a whole section of Italian masonry is also Catholic. That concludes the bulk of the broadcast. Today I'd like to take just a couple of minutes to sum up what we've looked at in this program, the second of two on the Knights of Malta.
And we don't really need to sum that up because all of you have been listening quite carefully. This is Nip Tuck back in the studios on May the 29th with Dave Emery. We are live with our last broadcast of the Radio Free America series on the Mediterranean merry-go-round. And we're going to take a short musical break, and we're going to continue live this time with more about the Knights of Malta. So don't go away. We have another hour and a half left of our final broadcast on the Mediterranean merry-go-round right here on KFJC Los Altos Hill. I'm going to continue on discussing the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, Catholic quote-unquote military organization, of which so many high-ranking, among others, American intelligence officers are involved. Now, bear in mind, we began our broadcast tonight talking about how the involvement of American intelligence has been directly connected all the way along to the attempt on the life of John Paul II, the attempted assassination of John Paul II, and that all the way along, such people as Paul Henze, former CIA station chief in Ankara, has been connected into the Turkish right wing, especially to Ruzi Nazar, an ex Oberleutnant in the SS and a revanchist Soviet Turk, and also a key member of the Grey Wolves.
Also, as far as Nazar goes, he had infiltrated the Grey Wolves on behalf of CIA, who he'd worked for alongside Paul Henze in the 1950s, too.
That's right. We've also talked about the fact that at the beginning of the broadcast that Theodore Shackley showed up to have a meeting with General Giuseppe Santavito of the P2 and also supersedes me, the secret intelligence organization within the military intelligence organization of Italy 3 months before the assassination attempt by the Pope. Later on, it turned out that Frank Turpel, a former underling of Theodore Shackley in the CIA's clandestine operations department, claimed to have trained Mehmet Ali Agha and the Grey Wolves. It was later discovered that not only Frank Turpel had been involved with the Grey Wolves, but as we mentioned, people like Ruzi Nazar, another CIA man, and that not only were the connections directly to the CIA, but also strong connections into West German intelligence, again, the former Galen organization, which eventually, after becoming the CIA Eastern Front Intelligence Unit, became BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the West German CIA, and that the BND, and especially Hans Kanepin, were very strongly connected to the Turkish Grey Wolves, out of which Mehmet Ali Agha and all the folks who got him the guns and the money and things like that sprang.
Now, another connection to remember, of course, is that Nazar hooks up with the World Anti-Communist League, too, and its connections with U.S. intelligence are very, very current. So a lot of different aspects of Western intelligence to bear in mind as we approach the Knights of Malta. Perhaps the key name to remember now as we think about Shackley, Turpel's control, probably before and after his official involvement with CIA. But remember that William Casey, currently head of the CIA, is a member of the Knights of Malta, along with the Buckleys, as we talked about, Alexander Haig, who was Secretary of State under the Reagan administration, J. Peter Grace, who we just heard all about and who we heard about in the very first program. But again, the dominant considerations here, the Knights of Malta, their Western intelligence links, and William Casey in particular and his participation in this organization.
That's right, because when we're talking about people like William Casey, this is not at all far-fetched, because when we're talking about the entire Mediterranean merry-go-round as a whole, we are talking about essentially corruption going to the very highest levels of the Vatican in the person of Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, of the Italian government in the persons of Giuseppe Santavito, head of military intelligence, and others, as we will see, all the way down the line, involvement by the very highest-ranking members of Italian society, Argentinian society, and others. So it is no surprise to find that the people that they have worked with long and hard, namely right-wing intelligence people in the United States, have other connections to this also, namely the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. We're going to read from some Italian press clips translated by Jonathan Marshall, who has been mentioned several times this evening.
By the way, this is also from Parapolitics issue of March 31st, 1982. It's the same issue, by the way, that the two-part Kevin Coogan article was from.
And the clips in question were originally translated from L'Espresso of June 28th, 1981. Many members of the P2 were also members of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. Licio Gelli found refuge at the diplomatic headquarters of the order in Montevideo. Of course, that's in Uruguay. where the ambassador was his friend and fellow Mason, Umberto Ortolani. Ortolani was the Sovereign Military Order's ambassador since 1979 and has been an SMOM Cavaliere Magistrale for 20 years. Other SMOM and P2 members included Admiral Giovanni Torrisi, head chief of staff for defense, General Giulio Grassini, head that's the domestic intelligence twin to CISME, General Giuseppe Santovito, head of military intelligence and counter-espionage, that's CISME, of course, and General Giovanni Alavena, a manager of the old CIFAR, that's the previous intelligence network. Others included Giovanni Guidi, president of the Banco di Roma. For SMOM members, their religion should make it impossible to join a Masonic lodge. Members of SMOM include ex-presidents of the Republic Giovanni Gronchi, Antonio Segni, and Giovanni Leone, five ex-chiefs of staff, Eugenio Henke, Giuseppe Aloia, and Giovanni De Lorenzo, and several D.C. deputies, Forlani, Andreotti, and Fanfani also. Gianni Agnelli, A-G-N-E-L-L-I, entered in 1945.
So a couple of the key names to review here. Now, we're talking about intersecting memberships between SMOM and P2. Probably the single most important name in that intersection is Giuseppe Santovito, the head of the Super CISME group. Santovito was the man, of course, that Theodore Shackley went to work with when he arrived 3 months before the Pope is shot. So that Giuseppe Santovito, in addition to being part of the P2 organization, is a member of Knights of Malta along with the head of the CIA at the time, William Casey. A very, very important connection to remember. It's also worth thinking about the fact that Forlani, Andreotti, and Fanfani were also involved with the Knights of Malta. In particular, Giulio Andreotti, a former Italian prime minister, is now the Italian foreign minister along with Bettino Craxi. And the Craxi government has been very vocal in supporting the Bulgarian thesis. Also, Arnaldo Forlani was prime minister at the time the P2 scandal was broke and was driven out of office by that very same P2 scandal.
One of the interesting things about the Craxi government's, as Dave put it, vocal support of the Bulgarian thesis is that by name, the Craxi government is a socialist government. Bettino Craxi, head of the Socialist Party in Italy. In practice, however, as we have mentioned in the past, the Socialist Party in Italy was the party that received early support from the CIA after World War II because of the fact that the CIA was frightened to death of a communist ascension to government in Italy. So long ago, the socialists in Italy learned that their bread was buttered by the CIA, and if they wanted to keep that bread right side up, that they had better do or at least listen very carefully to what the CIA suggested.
Okay, now, in particular, the role of... Now, Bettino Craxi also has connections to P2. As a matter of fact, and Pietro Longo, his finance minister, was forced to resign because of membership in P2. But remember now that... Now, as far as SMOM goes, Santovito is not only a member of P2, but also SMOM, so is head of CIA at the time, William Casey, a key element of the this whole tangle, because, again, remembering the Shackley connection, the Santovito connection to Super CISME, that is front and center in the whole connection. Now, the whole association that we're talking about here. Now, also recall that Giulio Andreotti, his presence in the Knights of Malta, because he also has key P2 dealings. We're going to review a short section from In God's Name by David Yalop, copyright 1984, hardcover edition by Bantam House. Talking about Licio Gelli, referred to here as the Puppet Master, Yalop writes, "The Puppet Master, who uses the secret codename Luciani, continues to give impressive demonstrations of the fact that he is a man of extraordinary influence. In 1979, Gelli and Ortolani began working to bring about a political reconciliation among Christian Democrat leader and former Prime Minister Giulio Andreotti and the socialist leader Bettino Craxi. The exposure of nearly 1,000 P2 members in 1981 slowed down these delicate negotiations. They have now flowered. At the time of this writing, the Prime Minister of Italy is Bettino Craxi. The Foreign Minister is Giulio Andreotti. Both men have much for which to thank Licio Gelli." And, of course, Andreotti, also a member of SMOM, like Casey, like Giuseppe Santovito, like a great many other people. That's worth thinking about.
Going back a little bit to examine some of the foundations of these connections between Western intelligence, the Vatican, etc., etc., we're going to read from a book entitled The Last Hero, a biography of Wild Bill Donovan, the founder of the OSS and, quote, father of the CIA. The book was published in 1982 by New York Times Books, written by Anthony Cave Brown. Donovan had long had important intelligence connections with the Roman Catholic Church, writes Cave Brown. He was well known to its hierarchy in North America and had been received by Pope Pius XII in July 1944. For their part, the Catholic hierarchs had entered into a friendly but unofficial liaison with Donovan and the OSS. That liaison had begun as early as 1941 when a Father Morlion, now he's important, we're going to spell it, M-O-R-L-I-O-N. The liaison had begun as early as 1941 when a Father Morlion, founder of a European Catholic anti-Comintern and at that time anti-Nazi intelligence service known as Pro Deo, was evacuated by Donovan from Lisbon to New York after the Germans had overrun Western Europe. Since that time, Donovan had financed Morlion and the Pro Deo service, although Morlion's reports, known within the OSS as the Black Reports, were often little more than dissertations on Catholic dogma in a world at war. Donovan's justification for the expenditure of special funds on such tracts was that they provided a valuable insight into the thinking of the Vatican, an institution of immense global political importance. Also, when the Allies liberated Rome in June 1944 and the Vatican became open to the Western powers, Donovan went to considerable expense, time, and trouble to transport Morlion from New York and establish him at the Holy See. These connections resulted in the Vatican's making available to the OSS the reports of the apostolic delegates in enemy territory, especially in Japan, where the nuncio provided much intelligence useful for the aerial bombardment of targets in the Japanese homeland. So the main thing to connect here is as early as 1941, a liaison between Donovan and the Vatican through the person of a Father Morlion, founder of an anti-Comintern intelligence service known as Pro Deo.
Now, we heard there was a reference to Pro Deo in the two-part Knights, well, in fact, in the second of the Knights of Malta article, Knights of Malta article by Kevin Coogan, the second of the two halves of that Red and the Hard Rain shows. More about Father Morlion and specifically the apparent connection of Father Morlion to the development of the Bulgarian thesis. Reading now from L'Espresso, the Italian news magazine's issue of the 19th of May, 1985. Research credit for the following story goes to Ted Rubenstein. It was translated for us by one of our listeners. Again, from Espresso, May 19th, 1985, the title of the article is The Occupant of the Apartment on the Second Floor. And the subheading, or the insertion here, goes, Surprise! In the same apartment building where lived Antonov of the Balkan Air and under accusation for the attempt on the Pope's life, there also lived a Belgian priest who had always kept a good relationship with the CIA. And the article reads as follows again. Espresso, May 19th of 85. Can an 81-year-old Dominican friar be the gray eminence behind an international plot? The hypothesis generates perplexity and immediate skepticism because of the nature of the person. But nevertheless, this new figure, a friar born in Belgium in 1904, is the one who appears in various journalistic research regarding the Bulgarian trail and the connection between the Italian and American secret services. Father Felix Andre Morlion. We won't find his name among the ones involved in the trial, but his past does not authorize his elimination from the suspects. Let's look at the facts. According to the deposition of Aja against the Bulgarian suspects, Antonov, Ivasov, and Vasiliev, given on December 28, 1982, Aja told the prosecutor Ilario Martella, quote, how he went to the apartment of the Balkan Air manager at the third floor of the 29th of Polia Boulevard. In there, according to Aja, a meeting was held. This meeting regarded the organization of the attempt on the Pope's life. The Turk also declared that on that occasion he also met Antonov's wife and 9-year-old daughter. But in the following interrogation, June of 83, Aja changes his story. He denies that he ever was at Antonov's apartment, that he ever saw his wife and daughter. He did not even know that he had a job with the Balkan Air. The repented, unquote, had to change his story when it was proved that in the days he indicated as those in which the meeting was held, Antonov's wife and daughter were not in Rome. But if Aja never was in Antonov's apartment, how did he know all the details that he had given to the prosecutor during the December 1982 interrogation? Could it be that someone had told him what to say? Aja, for example, had specified that in the apartment of the Bulgarian, quote, the dining room was divided by a gliding wall, maybe wood, unquote. In reality, the dining room was divided by a gliding curtain of gray material, unquote. It's a curious mistake because almost all the apartments in that building have gliding walls that divide the dining room from the living room. That can also be found in the apartment right below Antonov's, which, by the way, is occupied by Father Felix A. Morley, and when he comes back to Rome from his trips abroad.
Continuing with the L'Espresso article, a simple coincidence? If this was the only, if these were the only puzzling elements, certainly no suspicion could be authorized. The thing is that Father Morlian was for a number of years a CIA informant. He was also very close with persons belonging to the United States Right, persons that are very, very closely connected to the Italian political events. Among these persons, we find the ex-Secretary of State, Alexander Haig, who had among his collaborators Michael Ledeen, an expert in Italian affairs and a friend of Francesco Pazienza and General Giuseppe Santavito, the creators of the Super Sismi, the secret service behind the secret service that was involved in many murky affairs. But who is this Father Felix, Father Felix Morlian? Surely for over 50 years he has been one of the most tenacious fighters of communism. His career began in Belgium in 1930. There he created the, quote, Catholic Cinematographic League and the, quote, Center for the Catholic Press. These organizations were created with the intent of guiding Catholics. In 1934, he organized the Brigade of, the Brigade of Young Catholics that made anti-communist propaganda their number one priority. With the approach of the war, he began to cooperate more intensely with the far right, an organization that made their own the Mussolinian ideology their own. But in 1940, because of Hitler's anti-clericalism, he started to cooperate with the British intelligence service. At the end of the war, he went to the United States. When he came back to Italy in 1945, the friar worked for the OSS, the CIA's predecessor. In Italy, Spain, Brazil, and other countries of proven faith, he created the Pro Deo Centers, a well-financed network that that officially were a center for religious studies, but in reality, a center of anti-communist propaganda. In Rome, with the help of Monsignor Carlo Ferrero, he created the Pro Deo University for Social Studies. The real activity of Father Morlian was to send reports about the Vatican's foreign policies, the Italian Communist Party, and other leftist parties. The receiver of these reports was Alan Dulles' CIA, the intelligence services in London, the Office of Reserved Affairs within the Italian
Internal Department,
various industrialists in Italy, USA, and Latin America. He also kept files with the names of priests suspected of sympathizing with the communists or the left. But at one point, the Vatican decided that it did not want other persons to know about its affairs, and during the 1960s succeeded in keeping him out of Italy. But the Dominicans, thanks to his friendship with Cardinal Angelo dell'Acqua, came back after 3 years, but the Dominican, meaning Father Morlian, thanks to his friendship with Cardinal Angelo dell'Acqua, came back after 3 years. In later years, he continued to be active and kept contacts with the conservatives in the United States. He also traveled extensively in Brazil, Israel, and Spain. Some papers have written about his friendship with Ledeen. It is also known about Ledeen's friendship with Pazienza. When we called Morlian and asked if he knew him, he got very suspicious and just said, quote, I don't know him, he knows me. Again, I don't know him. I am a personal friend of people much bigger than him, people that work in the same institute, unquote. What institute is he referring to? Quote, that I won't tell, was the answer. At this point, we should say that the Bulgarian and Soviet press for a long time now have said that the CIA, with the help of the Super Sismi, the secret service behind the official one, the one of Pazienza and Santavito, are the organizers of the plot. Furthermore, they say that the Super Sismi is the one that has given Aja all the answers. We should also say that the name of Pazienza is often mentioned with reference to the attempt on the Pope's life. One of his secretaries, Maurizio Vizzigoli, has declared that he saw a very large report on Aja and the, quote, Bulgarian trail on his boss's desk. This report has since disappeared, and regarding this disappearance, Judge Domenico Sica is investigating the disappearance of this report. Another secretary, Ivaro Giarditi, declared that Pazienza had received several calls from Monsignor Marcinkus, president of the Vatican Bank. The Monsignor asked Pazienza to follow very closely the, quote, Aja affair. Follow it in which sense? All the answers are wrapped in the thickest fog. It will be the court's job to try to find the truth in about 1 month. We certainly hope that Father Morlian will be heard. He is certainly a neighbor whose past is not clear. Okay, now, again, reviewing very very carefully, here we have Father Felix Morlian, a Belgian priest with long anti-communist credentials and also a 40-year history of involvement with American and Western intelligence in general, but American intelligence in particular, the CIA and the OSS, with pipelines into the Vatican, and involved in anti-communist propaganda for a long time. Father Felix Morlian just happens to live in the same apartment building as Antonov, one of the Bulgarians that was accused of the Pope plot by Aja from prison. One of the ways that Aja collaborated this assertion, not collaborated, but one of the ways that Aja backed this assertion, was to describe Antonov's apartment, where he had supposedly had a meeting and where he had seen Aja, Antonov's wife and daughter. Well, when it turned out that Antonov's wife and daughter were not in town at the time of Aja's alleged meeting, he retracted his story. Strangely enough, one of the few physical details that was out of keeping with Aja's story was true in many of the other apartments in the complex, including that of Father Morlian. Now it turns out that not only is Father Morlian involved with the CIA all this time, Father Morlian is also involved with Michael Ledeen, although he denies it but claims that he knows of Ledeen and that he is involved with people at the same institute. Now again, as we have seen time and time again throughout this entire Bulgarian thesis, here is the man who is at this point not only connected directly to some of the instigators of the Bulgarian thesis, Michael Ledeen is also connected to the Italian Right, to people who quite probably were the instigators of the plot on the Pope, and one of Ledeen's contacts, Father Felix Morlian, an anti-communist priest connected to the CIA, just happens to live in the same apartment with one of the accused Bulgarians, and just happens to live in an apartment whose details fit that, but not that of the apartment of Antonov, that in the allegations that Aja makes about his meetings with the Bulgarians to plot the assassination of the Pope. Again, a whole series of bizarre coincidences that we are expected to believe if we are going to believe the Pope plot as portrayed from the Bulgarian angle, but if we actually turn it on its head and look at it correctly, we realize there's yet further evidence of the trail linking those involved in the Pope plot to Western intelligence.
Now, the fact that Aja was able to describe, well, first of all, let me tell you that broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC Los Altos Hills, beyond that, the fact that Aja described Morlian's apartment rather than Antonov's in the description which he initially gave to Italian authorities is significant in light of the fact that, of course, Morlian and Antonov lived in the same building, and of course, in particular, for our purposes here, Morlian's long association with U.S. intelligence, and in particular, his association with Michael Ledeen and Francesco Pazienza. Now, we've dealt with the Ledeen-Pazienza connection in our third program, reviewing that very briefly and its significance for the whole P2 complex. Reading once again from Covert Action Information Bulletins, issue number 23 from the spring of 1985. And talking about connections between Ledeen and Pazienza. The power of the United States vis-a-vis independent Italy was displayed by the CIA in its very first covert action, the crude interventionism in the late 1940s, in which millions of dollars were poured into the support of conservative Italian politicians, both directly and by the purchase of Italian media. This process was repeated in the 1976 elections, in which the power of the Communist Party induced another large U.S. input. Money, organized efforts to get Italian Americans to solicit relatives, and open and covert propaganda. The most interesting aspects of this interventionism from the standpoint of the Bulgarian connection was the energetic role played by Claire Sterling and Michael Ledeen in 1976. The two collaborated on several articles placed in the Italian media on the Red Menace, an alleged Soviet aid to the Italian left. Both Ledeen and Sterling have long specialized in leveling accusations against the enemy which were directly applicable to the side for which they were dispensing propaganda. Michael Ledeen was a journalist working for Il Giornale, a right-wing Milan newspaper that regularly followed the U.S. political line. Worried about the 1976 election outcome, Italian TV was state-owned and not accessible, U.S. officials bought up huge blocks of time on Monte Carlo TV, which could reach Italy. Anti-communist news and documentary materials provided by the editorial staff of Il Giornale, with Michael Ledeen an active participant, were then fed into Italy via Monte Carlo. In the 1970s and early 1980s, Michael Ledeen was a friend of and collaborator with Francesco Pazienza, an Italian businessman with links to the mafia and close ties to key members of P2 and the Italian military intelligence service, SISMI. Pazienza was a close friend of Licio Gelli and provided his private yacht to help Gelli escape from prison. Michael Ledeen also apparently knew Licio Gelli. The Italian weekly Panorama reported on March 29, 1982, that investigators had intercepted a phone message between Gelli and Florence lawyer Federico Federici, in the course of which Gelli informed Federici that he had written a book that could be given to Michael Ledeen. Both Ledeen and Pazienza were friends of Alexander Haig, U.S. Secretary of State, in 1981. Pazienza was also an associate of Roberto Calvi, the murdered head of Banco Ambrosiano. Before his death, Calvi had swindled more than $1 billion through a complex chain of bank transactions that deeply involved P2 and the Vatican Bank. Pazienza helped Calvi take refuge as the Banco Ambrosiano crisis reached its peak, and he introduced Calvi to Flavio Carboni, the last man known to have seen Calvi alive. At the time of Ajax's assassination attempt, SISMI was headed by General Giuseppe Santavito, a P2 member and protector of Pazienza, and I would interject, as we just saw, also a key member of Knights of Malta. Continuing. During Santavito's tenure, in fact, Pazienza had extraordinary powers and was the dominant individual in a small group of Secret Service plumbers, the Super S, made up of P2 members using the resources of SISMI and answerable only to Santavito. Italian investigators have shown that SISMI, Pazienza, and Michael Ledeen, perhaps working through Super S together, lured President Jimmy Carter's brother Billy into a compromising relationship with Colonel Gaddafi during the 1980 Reagan presidential campaign. According to the Italian newspaper La Repubblica, quote, "This scandalous material was gathered mostly by Pazienza and by his American friend Michael Ledeen. Pazienza availed himself of SISMI both for the use of some secret agents and for the expenses of organizing the scandalous plan." It seems that the organizers got a huge payoff for before Billy Gate, unquote. Moreover, Santavito and Pazienza got great advantages in return from American officials, in fact, may have been helped in other obscure affairs. The Billy Gate operation did not come under SISMI's institutionally mandated task, and for that reason, Judge Sica brought charges of pursuing private interest through official activities. Ledeen, Pazienza, and SISMI, working together in the service of the Reagan administration and manipulating the Italian political and media environment with money and the special resources of an important intelligence agency, is suggestive. After Reagan's election, Ledeen was more powerful than previously. He is at present working under contract to the Pentagon and the State Department, and it takes little imagination to contemplate the possibility that he and his friends might work out a way to take advantage of Ajax's presence in jail and his alleged visit to Bulgaria. Billy Gate, unquote, was a model for what can be done in the way of setting somebody up for a media coup using the power available to U.S. agents and their Italian allies. Ajax was visited by Major Petrocelli of SISMI in his Assoli Piceno prison on December 29, 1981. Lieutenant Colonel Giuseppe Belmonte, also of SISMI, subsequently arrested, and Francesco Pazienza himself, also reportedly visited Ascoli Piceno prison on several occasions during the period in which Ajax was gathering his thoughts in preparation for implicating the Bulgarians. No doubt, Magistrate Martella will clarify the purpose of those visits in his 1,200-page document submitted to the court in asking for an indictment of the Bulgarians. So, note here that Ledeen and Francesco Pazienza associated not only with P2, but specifically the Super SISMI group of SMOM and P2 member Giuseppe Santavito. We've looked at that before, and of course we looked at Licio Gelli's honored position at Reagan's inauguration, which may have been in service for the Billy Gates scam. But keep in mind also now, for our purposes here, the visits to the Assoli Piceno prison by Major Petrocelli of SISMI and of also other alleged visits, because we're going to take a look at the possibility of how Mehmet Ali Agha may have gotten some of the information that he was able to get hold of, including and especially the curious details about Antonov's apartment, which are the curious details about Father Morlian's apartment, which were given as details of Antonov's.
This next is an article from the New York Times for Monday, June 17, 1985. The headline is "Italy Secret Service Accused of Molding Ajax's Testimony." The article is by John Tagliabue, or Tagliabue, or Tagliabue, we've never quite known. The dateline is Rome. A major organized crime figure who turned state's evidence in Italy has said that Mehmet Ali Agha, the convicted assailant of Pope John Paul II, was coached in prison by the Italian Secret Services to say that the shooting of the Pope in 1981 was commissioned by the Bulgarian Security Service, and thus the Soviet Union. Giovanni Pandico, a confessed racketeer now giving evidence in a major trial against the Camorra, the center of organized crime in Naples, told a weekly news magazine that Pietro Musumeci, spelled M-U-S-U-M-E-C-I. The former deputy head of Italy's military intelligence service, which is CSMI, by the way, used organized crime channels to assure Mr. Aja his liberty in exchange for testimony implicating Soviet bloc governments in the plot. This explanation of why Mr. Aja is accusing Bulgaria and the Soviet Union of commissioning the murder of the Pope has been suggested before, mainly by Soviet and Bulgarian officials in leftist newspapers in Italy. But Mr. Pandico's claims are expected to have a major impact on the trial here against three Bulgarians and four Turks, accused of conspiring to shoot the Pope, because it is the first time a figure with such intimate familiarity with Italian organized crime has raised the charge. Moreover, Mr. Pandico is one of 123 witnesses who will testify at the trial. Mr. Pandico is the government's principal witness in a much-publicized trial now taking place in Naples against 251 organized crime suspects. Last week, Mr. Pandico's mother was killed and several members of his family seriously wounded when a powerful bomb, thought to have been placed by underworld assassins, tore apart their home. Mr. Pandico's statement, in an interview to appear Monday in the weekly news magazine L'Espresso, also creates a new link between the Pope's assailant and the rightist Propaganda Due Masonic Lodge. Mr. Musumeci was a lodge member and is accused by Italian officials of having conspired with other members to set up a group within the Italian intelligence service known as Super S to carry out illegal activities and hinder communist rule in Italy if the Communist Party gained an electoral victory. In the interview, Mr. Pandico said that Mr. Musumeci obtained the agreement of Raffaele Cutolo, C-U-T-O-L-O, the alleged chief of the Naples Camorra, during a meeting March 1, 1982, in the Ascioli Piceno jail where Mr. Cutolo was being held to try to influence Mr. Aja to testify against the Soviet bloc countries. At the time, Mr. Aja was also being held in Ascioli Piceno, a notoriously porous prison on the east coast of southern Italy, and is thought to have had contact with Mr. Cutolo. Mr. Aja was to be promised his freedom in exchange for the testimony, Mr. Pandico said. So we have a contact, as we've seen before many, many times. The contacts between the right wing in Italy and the mafia are legion, and in many cases it's virtually impossible to tell the two apart, especially when you're talking about people like Michele Sindona. And we have here a contact between Pietro Musumeci, Giuseppe Santavito, second in command, directly through Raffaele Cutolo, head of the Neapolitan Camorra, the Neapolitan mafia equivalent, with Mehmet Ali Aja. We also have a series of visits that we mentioned before from CSMI agents and Francesco Pazienza, a super CSMI founder, with Mehmet Ali Aja in jail, all before he came up with his Bulgarian theory and his supposedly corroborative details that in fact turned out to be corroborative details to the apartment of a CIA priest. So again, the Bulgarian thesis story not only falls apart, but under close inspection, the shards of the theory lead directly to Western intelligence.
Now, whether or not Mr. Pandico's claim of the Italian Secret Service's coaching Aja through Mr. Cutolo, whether or not that claim is correct, it has been definitely verified that Aja did meet with Raffaele Cutolo, the capo of the Camorra, the Neapolitan crime syndicate. And also, it's going to be brought in another player on the whole P2 nexus, I guess we could say, is going to be brought in here as well, namely the Red Brigades. This article antedated the New York Times article about Giovanni Pandico by almost 2 years. This comes from The Guardian, formerly the Manchester Guardian, leading British paper, and this was researched for us by Ted Rubenstein. Ted got this from The Guardian of June 22nd, 1983, in other words, almost 2 years to the day before the article Nip just read you. This is from George Armstrong, The Guardian's Rome correspondent, and it's headlined, Red Brigades in Blood-Packed Link, unquote. With more than 500 alleged Camorra members or sympathizers now imprisoned in various parts of Italy after last weekend's police crackdown, further information about the links between the Neapolitan underworld and the Red Brigades have come to light. The Camorra, according to the Italian press, had agreed to kill several people designated by the Red Brigades as a result of a blood pact between the two criminal groups. The hub of the story is the Red Brigade's kidnapping in 1981 of Mr. Ciro Cirillo, a Christian Democrat leader in Naples. He was released about 3 months later, and the terrorists then claimed that they had received the equivalent of £700,000, but that a larger ransom had in fact been paid. The Christian Democrat Party has always denied having paid any ransom, and clearly the Cirillo family did not pay. The victim said that friends, unquote, had raised the ransom. According to the four Camorra members who have turned informants and are under police protection, the Camorra leader, Mr. Raffaele Cutolo, then in prison, had been asked by the Christian Democrats to intervene with the Red Brigades in the Cirillo case. Mr. Cutolo agreed, but asked for a letter acknowledging the party's request from a nationally known figure. He was given the letter. He then demanded other favors from the party, which would have reduced police harassment for the Camorra, and he asked that he be transferred to a hospital for the insane, similar to the one from which he had escaped with the use of dynamite in 1979. Mr. Cutolo was, after Mr. Cirillo's release, transferred instead to an island off Sardinia, where he remains. The Camorra and the Red Brigades then shared the £1.3 million ransom. During his time in the Assoli Piceno prison, where a jailed Camorra man served him as a valet and supplied him with champagne, the prison chaplain arranged for Mr. Cutolo to meet Ali Aja, the Turk who shot the Pope in 1981. Reading that last sentence again. During his time in the Assoli Piceno prison, where a jailed Camorra man served him as a valet and supplied him with champagne, the prison chaplain arranged for Mr. Cutolo to meet Ali Aja, the Turk who shot the Pope in 1981. During their audience, Mr. Cutolo allegedly guaranteed the Turk that there would be no more attempts on his life by fellow prisoners if he would cooperate with the police. That may have influenced the Turk to talk about his Bulgarian connection. The prison chaplain has been arrested in the recent Camorra roundup. So whether or not, as speculated upon in both here and by Mr. Fondico, whether or not Cutolo did indeed talk to Mehmet Ali Aja about cooperating with the authorities, it has been established that the two met, and that should be kept in mind of, in light of Mr. Pondico's claim, just a couple of, well, that Nip read you in the last article.
Okay, we're going to read a little bit here from the Wall Street, I almost said the Wall Street Pope, I don't know why, the Wall Street Journal, perhaps a Freudian slip, for Thursday, August 8th, 1985. The headline is, former spy says he warned the Vatican of assassination try. The subhead, name of Pazienza, crops up at trial of the Bulgarians in attempt to kill Pope. This article was written by, it just says, by a Wall Street Journal staff reporter. With a propensity for being at the scene of impending scandal, Francesco Pazienza recently popped up in the case of the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul II in May 1981. At the continuing trial of the Bulgarian officials in Rome, the judge attempted to quiet the courtroom June 19th by shouting, "Patience," or, in Italian, "Pazienza." At this point, the star prosecution witness, Mehmet Ali Aja, the one-time Turkish neo-Nazi already convicted of shooting the Pope, interjected, "Yes, Francesco Pazienza." Asked to explain, Mr. Aja made headlines here and in Italy by saying that in 1982, Mr. Pazienza had come to him in prison offering freedom if he would implicate the Bulgarians in the crime, as he has. Mr. Pazienza, who had left his job with SISMI, the Italian spy agency, in 1981, says he never met Mr. Aja, but was involved in the case in other ways involving the spreading of information on terrorism. Ironically, he and other former SISMI officials faced charges that they illegally used SISMI to try to blame right-wing terrorism on leftists. Mr. Pazienza says that as a terrorism expert for SISMI, he and his close associate Alexandre de Marange, the now retired head of French intelligence, warned the Vatican of an impending Soviet attack on the Pope 6 months before Mr. Aja actually pulled the trigger. Mr. de Marange has told a British newspaper he issued such a warning. He didn't return telephone messages from the Wall Street Journal. Second, Mr. Pazienza says he helped supply information to the person who, besides Mr. Aja, is perhaps most associated with the issue, Claire Sterling, who reported the case for Bulgarian responsibility in a book and in the New York Times. Ms. Sterling is a friend and sometimes journalistic collaborator of Michael Ledeen, who has been associated with Mr. Pazienza, but she angrily denies she ever met Mr. Pazienza. Asked about the lunch together that Mr. Pazienza describes in detail, she calls his statement, quote, a total absolute lie, unquote. But she does acknowledge two meetings with Mr. Pazienza's boss at SISMI, the late General Giuseppe Santavito. She angrily hangs up the phone without answering after being asked questions about whether she knew Mr. de Marange. At any rate, she, Mr. Ledeen, and Arno de Borgrav, who used material Mr. Pazienza helped supply, became in 1981 the three leading journalistic exponents of the theory that the Soviet Union is responsible for Western European terrorism. On April 24, 1981, their testimony on that subject opened the hearings of a new U.S. Senate subcommittee on terrorism.